New Year. This is Kathy bringing you the Clinton Journal for Friday, January the 2nd. And they're doing a year in review, starting with December of 2024. County Clerk Carrie Harris reported a primary vote would not be necessary to the 2025 Clinton City Council election, scheduled for April 1st. Harris reported it was confirmed by the State Board of Elections because of Clinton's Commissioner Council form of government. The Clinton School District filed its annual tax levy December 18, 2024. Superintendent Drew Goble reported property tax value for the district indicated about 19%. The tax rate did not increase. January of 2025, Clinton sales tax went up 0.50%, that's a half a cent, on January 1st, 2025, from 6.75% to 7.25%. Locally imposed business district sales tax, home rule municipal sales tax, and non-home rule municipal sales taxes were affected in various jurisdictions in Illinois. Clinton is a non-rural home municipality. Clinton received 5 inches of snow during a storm the first week of January. The massive storm stretched from the Great Plains to the Mid-Atlantic and as far south as Florida. A failed water sample triggered a boil order in Clinton. A miscommunications resulted in a resampling of the water for the IEPA. Subsequent samples passed testing. Human remains were discovered behind the Arrowhead Acres campground southeast of Clinton. Work began to identify the deceased person. Tony Harris was sworn in as the new Clinton administrative assistant. Harris previously served as coordinator of the county's 911 CENTCOM Emergency Dispatch Center. DeWitt County modified its requirement for residency for its EMA, Emergency Management Agency, post. The county board voted to allow the EMA director in the future to reside within a 25-mile radius. The county's EMA directory asked the board to consider the change in order to access less expensive housing options. In February, DeWitt County Coroner Randy Rice reported it would take several months to identify the human remains discovered near Arrowhead Acres Campground in January. The Illinois State Police was conducting a DNA match to try to match the deceased with a living relative. The City Council was rescheduled to vote on an agreement with Quickwall, a glass partition manufacturer planning to relocate to the former R.R. Donnelly plant from Springfield. Quickwall is set to begin this spring manufacturing partitions for a $14 million contract with the Orange County, Florida Convention Center. The city officially endorsed Quickwall's move to Clinton. The company's goal is to have approximately 225 employees and double Quickwall's revenue within 3 years. Rewild Renewables briefed the City Council on a plan to develop a community solar project northeast of the city. The firm was in talks with landowners about the proposed project. Members of the AFSCME local representing county highway employees addressed the county board for the second time, urging board members to intervene in contract negotiations. Union members and representatives claimed county board members had little understanding about what highway workers did, and further claimed that the county's attorney negotiator was disrespectful and rigid. In March of this past year, the DeWitt County Genealogical Society presented a plan to the City Council to clean up the Woodlawn Cemetery Civil War burial plot. IDNR eventually conducted a workshop with the Society and volunteers on restoring the old gravestones, and they began work on the project. The City of Clinton opened a new street cutting through its newest housing subdivision located between Leander Street and Park Lane. Home construction began in the subdivision over the summer. The DeWitt County Board declared a board seat vacancy. Member Tom Ferris resigned for personal reasons, vacating his seat on the board. Ferris is a member of the Republican Party. Board President Joe Witte thanks Ferris for his service. Ferris has subsequently been appointed to fill another vacant seat on the board, left open by Kristina Deerwater's resignation in early fall. The Clinton School Board heard a plan from a steering committee to consolidate all pre-K students at Douglas School and all kindergarten and first grade students at Lincoln School. The plan has been ongoing throughout 2025, with the board recently approving the proposed floor plan arrangements of the schools. In April, the Harlem Wizards basketball troop visited Clinton in April, putting on a show at the Clinton Junior High School. The event was a fundraiser for the vault. The City Council heard a proposal for an 825-acre common community solar energy project plan northeast of the city. Chase Ford, Senior Development Manager for NextAmp, offered a survey of the company's proposed Prairie Flats solar project. The County Board's Land Use Committee discussed fine-tuning the county's commercial solar energy ordinance. Members weren't necessarily receptive to the influx of interest to the solar developers in the area, but recognized the technology was expanding and wanted the ordinance to be ready for whatever that included. The Clinton Tree Commission honored the late Mike Reedy, former Clinton Chief of Police, with a tree planting on Arbor Day. A green spire linden tree was planted in honor at the city's arboretum. In May, the school district moved forward with a plan to install a state-of-the-art video display scoreboard at a cost of $340,000. OES Scoreboards was chosen as the contractor. Jerry Wayne and Matt Keppel, who selected the potential contractors, reported that the OES system was likely the most cost-effective because of its flexibility of usage. The county began on a plan to replace the deteriorated sewer line into the county building. The line was original to the building. The cost was estimated to be about $8,500. Elaine Michalassi presided over her first council meeting as mayor of Clinton. During the same meeting, the council approved reappointment of John Hoblett, city attorney, Karen Wilford, city clerk, Clint Lichtenwalter, city treasurer, Tom Edmonds, budget officer, and Steve Loeb, public works director. The homestead was honored as a Blue Star Museum, which offered the opportunity for free admission to currently serving military personnel and their families from May through September. The county started planning to hire a full-time IT employee. County Board Technology Chairman Pat Ryan reported that his group discussed the need for such a position. He said they were working on a job description. In June, Constellation owner of the Clinton Green Energy Center, the Clinton Power Station, struck a 20-year deal with Facebook parent company Meta for Meta to purchase power from the Clinton plant. The deal amounts to an expansion of Clinton's output by 30 megawatts. The city of Clinton assumed responsibility for planning the annual July 4th fireworks display after the Celebrate Clinton organization announced in April it would disband because of a lack of volunteers. City Administrator Tony Harris and City Treasurer Clint Lichtenwalter finalized the insurance coverage necessary to stage the program. The county saw its first application for a commercial solar facility come through in June. County Zoning Administrator Elizabeth Weichel reported she was working with four solar energy developers. She said Prairie Flats project was close to submitting its application. Clinton Junior High School students continued the Good Cemeterian project in Woodlawn Cemetery, volunteering to clean up gravestones in the cemetery and compiling histories on many of the residents buried there. The city began researching the feasibility of restoring the old iron bridge connecting parts of Woodlawn and Memorial Cemeteries. The bridge was closed several years ago to vehicle traffic and later also to pedestrians. Local residents and store owner Doug Graves approached the city council about looking into the possibility of restoring the bridge. Piatrain, the nonprofit organization serving Piatt County with public transportation, assumed responsibility of show bus routes serving DeWitt County. Piatrain serves Clinton, Farmer City, Wapella, and surrounding areas with door-to-door demand response rides for a variety of needs, including medical appointments, work, shopping, and social visits. There will be more of this back look at 2025 in next week's journal. Of the news on the front page, CFD responds to an electrical emergency. Clinton Fire Department responded Sunday at about 10:32 p.m. to an electrical emergency in the area of Adams and Walnut Streets. Engine company number 2 arrived, finding that a tree had fallen onto electrical transmission lines and were causing an arc in the street. The arc caused large amounts of fire and smoke. Firefighters evacuated the area of concern. Clinton School District bus service responded to transport residents from the scene. A first alarm was called to Maroa, Kenny, Wapella, and Waynesville fire departments to stage in Clinton in case the situation worsened. Firefighters responded to 3 additional incidents during this time, 2 of smoke inside a house and another electrical emergency on E South Street. Ameren arrived to Walnut Street to cut electricity to the location. CFD reported no injuries or personal property damage. ROSC hosts free family movie January 10th. DeWitt County Recovery Oriented System of Care Council will host its annual opportunity for families to attend a free movie at the Clintonia Eagle Theater. Seats are limited for the January 10th 10 a.m. showing of any film featured at the Clinton Theater. Reservations may be made via email to the ROSC director, Maggie Memott, at mmemott@pyattmhc.org or by phone at 217-935-3427. DeWitt County ROSC is part of a statewide network of organizations funded in whole or in part by the Illinois Department of Human Services, Division of Substance Use Prevention and Recovery. The local movie event was sponsored by donors Rob Spickard, Ben and Nicole Dowers, David Morris, Michael Schroeder, Edith Brady Lunny, Helen Mickle-Lassie, and Warner Hospital and Health Services. Chamber to host annual dinner on January 24th. The Clinton Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism Bureau will host its annual dinner and meeting on Saturday, January 24th at the Clinton Country Club. The evening will begin with social hour and check-in from 5 to 6 p.m., followed by the annual meeting at 6 p.m. and dinner at 6:30. This year's theme, Small Town, Big Impact, celebrates the businesses, organizations, and individuals who help make Clinton a strong and connected community. Guests will enjoy a live interactive mural, a community board where attendees can leave a note, and a live musical performance by Douglas Willis. The event will also introduce new business award categories recognizing outstanding local impact. The mural and community board will be displayed in the chamber office following the dinner. The annual dinner provides an opportunity to reflect on the past year, celebrate local achievements, and look ahead to the future of Clinton community. For more information, please contact the Clinton Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism Bureau at 217-935-3364. And there's one obituary here for Dr. Krishna, Dr. C. N. Radhakrishna, also known as Dr. Krishna, 85, formerly of Clinton, passed away on November 24th from complications of a heart procedure. If you have a memory of Dr. Krishna, please share it at this virtual memorial site. In lieu of flowers, donate to a local food bank or assist the homeless. And, it's not all here. I can't give it to you. But it sounds like while he lived in Clinton, he came into touch with many, many people. Looking at new laws. Illinois expands job protected leave for parents with newborns and NICU. General J.B. Pritzker signed House Bill 2978, dubbed the Family Neonatal Intensive Care Leave Act, earlier this year, and it took effect yesterday. It requires employers of between 16 and 50 workers to provide up to 10 days of unpaid leave to employees who have a child in NICU. Larger employers must provide up to 20 days. The law applies to both part and full-time workers. It covers a broader swath of workers than the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act, the law requiring public agencies K-12 schools and provide companies with at least 50 employees to provide up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave per year. Workers eligible for FMLA must exhaust that leave first before utilizing NICU leave. Employers covered under the law must maintain their employees' health insurance benefits and guarantee their reinstatement upon the conclusion of leave. Employers can't force workers to exhaust their paid leave instead of unpaid NICU leave, although employees can take it if they choose. Violations may result in fines of up to $5,000. And some other new labor laws going into effect this year. AI in employment decisions. An amendment to the Illinois Human Rights Act, House Bill 3773, prohibits the use of AI, which is artificial intelligence, in employment decisions such as recruitment, hiring, and promotion, if that use results in discrimination due to race, religion, sex, and age. The law, which goes into effect January 1st, will require employers to disclose use of AI in employment decisions. The measure, however, could potentially run afoul of a recent order that limits how states can regulate AI. Documenting domestic violence. House Bill 1278 prevents employers from disciplining employees for using work devices to document domestic violence, sexual violence, gender violence, or other forms of violence against them or family member. Employers also have to grant employees access to such documentation and communication stored on the devices. The law was inspired by a New York woman who used her work device to document domestic abuse committed by her husband. She was disciplined by her employer and later murdered by her husband. Workplace transparency. House Bill 3638 amends the Illinois Workplace Transparency Act to broaden the definition of unlawful employment practice to include any act prohibited by the Illinois Human Rights Act, the Federal Civil Rights Act, and any other state or federal law covering employment issues. Employment contracts can also no longer include terms that limited employees' ability to engage in a concerted activity like collective bargaining, and it prohibits contract stipulations that shorten the state statute of limitations for employee claims, apply the law of another state to claims, or require claims to be resolved outside Illinois. Paid leave for organ donors. House Bill 1616 extends paid leave requirements for organ donors to part-time employees. Under the law, workers can use up to 10 days leave per year to serve as an organ donor. Part-time workers' pay for these days will be their average daily pay rate over the previous 2 months. Military honors. Under Senate Bill 220, employers with more than 50 workers must offer up to 8 hours of paid leave per month, capped at 40 hours per year, for employees to participate in a military funeral honors detail. That is in addition to regular paid time off. Unemployment benefits. House Bill 3200 allows for someone who voluntarily leaves their job for mental health reasons to be eligible for unemployment benefits. It's a 3-year pilot program that sunsets on December 24, 2028. And it looks like there's some more laws on A12. Well, let's some more. Illinois state 1% grocery tax will go away on January 1st, although many people will continue to pay at the local level. Data compiled by the Illinois Municipal League shows that 656 municipalities, a little more than half of the state's municipalities, have passed an ordinance establishing their own grocery tax. Those communities are home to 7.2 million people, or 56.5% of the state's population. Three counties, Washington, Wabash, and Moultrie, have also approved countywide grocery taxes. Governor J.D. Pritzker signed a bill in 2024 eliminating the statewide grocery tax, which he touted as a measure to ease residents' tax burden. But because the revenue from the state grocery tax went to municipal governments rather than state coffers, the measure allowed local governments to levy their own 1% tax via ordinance rather than a referendum to voters. And some other laws that will take place in the new year. The phase-out of small single-use plastic bottles in Illinois hotel rooms continues. Senate Bill 2960, passed and signed into law in 2024, bars hotels from providing toiletries such as shampoo, conditioner, and bath soap in less than 6-ounce plastic containers unless specifically requested by the hotel guest. The ban took effect in hotels with 50 or more rooms on July 1st and takes effect for all hotels starting in 2026. Hotels in violation will receive a written warning for the first offense and be subject to fines of up to $1,500 for subsequent violation. The legislation is intended to spur the state's hospitality industry to reduce its plastic footprint by shifting to either refillable toiletry containers or larger plastic bottles. Similar laws have been enacted in other states like California, New York, and Washington. Squatter removal. Senate Bill 1563 will make it easier for authorities to remove squatters who are illegally staying at someone else's residence. The law clarifies that a court-ordered eviction is not required for the police to remove squatters from a person's home, and police can enforce criminal trespass charges against a squatter. Pritzker signed the law in July after squatters moved into a home next door to Representative Marcus Evans in Chicago. According to ABC7, Chicago police told homeowners they couldn't remove the squatters from the home, and the homeowners would have to go through the eviction process in Cook County Court, which can take months. Drinking water protections. Senate Bill 1723 bans carbon sequestration, the process of capturing and storing carbon by injecting it underground within an area that overlies, underlies, or passes through a U.S. Environmental Protection Agency designated sole source aquifer. The new law applies to the footprint of the Mahama Aquifer, which is the main source of drinking water for more than 500,000 people across a 15-county area in central Illinois. It comes as Illinois, especially downstate, is targeted for carbon sequestration projects due to the state's favorable geology and the availability of federal tax credits. Studies, including those conducted by the researchers at the University of Illinois, have found minimal risk to water sources from sequestration activity. But the legislation was a priority for Central Illinois community activists, environmental agencies, and a bipartisan cadre of local lawmakers with zero risk tolerance due to the lack of a clear alternative water source if the aquifer were tainted. Safer gear for firefighters. Illinois will take first steps toward requiring safer gear for firefighters. Under House Bill 2409, manufacturers of firefighter turnout gear starting in 2026 must provide written notice if their products contain PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. Numerous scientific studies have linked exposure to PFAS and an increasing risk of developing various forms of cancer. Manufacturers will all be banned from selling turnout gear and personal protective equipment containing PFAS altogether starting January 1, 2027. Life assist fees. House Bill 2336 allows municipalities or fire districts to charge assisted living facilities or nursing homes for calls to the fire department requesting help lifting a resident when it is not an emergency. The bill was an initiative of the Illinois Municipal League, which urged the calls to fire departments for the non-emergency service are a burden on local governments and shift liabilities for injuries that happen during the process to fire departments rather than the facility. Stadium funding. Senate Bill 2772 adds women's professional sports to the types of facilities the Illinois Sports Facilities Authority can oversee. Current law only allows the ISFA to oversee sports facilities for baseball, football, and auto racing. The bill is not designed to move any team stadium proposals forward, although the Chicago Stars women's soccer team has previously been reported to be interested in building a new stadium with help from state funding. The bill was the only one related to sports stadium funding that advanced in Springfield in 2025. The Chicago Bears committed earlier this year to building a stadium in Arlington Heights, but are still waiting for approval from the village and struggling to find support in Springfield for funding. Public official privacy. House Bill 576 allows state lawmakers, constitutional officers, and state's attorneys, among others, to request that their personal information be redacted on public websites. Public officials would be able to use their campaign funds to pay for personal security services and security upgrades to their home, including security systems, cameras, walls, fences, and other physical improvements. Rewilding. House Bill 2726 allows the Illinois Department of Natural Resources to implement rewilding as a conservation strategy for the state. This could entail the restoration of land to the natural state and the reproduction of native species, especially apex predators and keystone species like bison and beavers. Illinois is believed to be the first state to codify this strategy into law. Reservation app regulations. State lawmakers voted this year to crack down on third-party restaurant reservation apps. House Bill 2456 prohibits third-party reservation services from selling reservations without a restaurant's permission. Restaurants are still allowed to partner with the services. Naloxone in libraries. House Bill 1910 requires that libraries maintain a supply of opioid overdose medications like naloxone. This drug is often administered through a nasal spray like Narcan. The law also requires that at least one staff member be trained to identify overdoses and administer the drug, says Jerry Nowicki, contributed to this story, and it is from the Capital News, Illinois. And we've gone back to page 3. Blown away by subscriber's $1,000 gift from the Mac desk by Billy McMacken. Recently, I opened an envelope that stopped me in my tracks. Inside was a handwritten letter responding to the notice we published about subscription rate increases in our 8 papers in the McLean County. No worries, there are no subscription rate increases upcoming for the Clinton Journal. The writer complimented our honesty about the change. She said she appreciated being told ahead of time. She said she valued the paper. She said she looked forward to Fridays because that's the day the Normalite, the newspaper in Normal, arrives in her mailbox. And tucked inside the letter was a check for $1,000. I was blown away. Still am, to be honest, such generosity. She didn't request anonymity. I'm the one choosing to keep her name out of print. That's the least I can do to honor a kindness that was freely given without any expectation of public credit. Her letter talked about growing up in Des Plaines in a newspaper household. She remembered when that became just one. She wasn't even sure if Des Plaines still has a newspaper today. For the record, it does. She said it saddens her to see so many papers disappear, and then she wrote the sentence that hit me the hardest. Quote, "In the big scheme of things, it probably will help just a little. Sometimes a little is all it takes," unquote. Sometimes a little is all it takes. If you run a newspaper or multiple in 2025, that line is gospel. It's not just about money, though of course we're grateful. It's belief. It's someone saying that work matters, the community matters, the stories matter. This $1,000 gift came from someone who loves the paper, not because it's perfect, not because it's flashy, not because it's breaking national news or chasing awards, but because it's theirs. It belongs to this place. It tells the stories and happens here and nowhere else on earth. That makes the Clinton Journal worth fighting for. It makes all of these papers worth fighting for. After receiving her letter, I didn't just mail a thank you. I drove to her house to thank her face to face. She met me at the door. I gave her a hug, and she told me again how much she enjoys the paper and how badly she wants it to succeed. That kind of support just doesn't keep the lights on. It keeps us hungry. It motivates us to do the best job we can every single week because someone believes in us. But the real thanks belongs to all of you, every teacher, advertiser, coach who emails box scores late at night, every volunteer who snaps photos at a school program, every parent who sends in an event announcement, every business who buys an ad, even when times are tight, every subscriber who renews without hesitation. In a world where local newspapers are disappearing, you are the difference between silence and the community. Sometimes a little is all it takes, and here a little is everything. And that was written by Billy McMacken, who's the owner of the Normalite Newspaper Group. This next article, "What Did I Miss 10 Years Ago? Dear Clinton," by Joe Mellon. Hello, Clinton. In this week's article, I'm diving back into the mid-2010s, 5 years after the iPad's introduction and 5 years before COVID. I was firmly in my post-book writing publishing part of my career, laugh out loud, working as the bookkeeper at property management companies. I was also about halfway through my 4-year marriage to Merrill. We were friends before and still are. One of the many things Merrill and I have in common is our love of Broadway musicals. In 2015, Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote and released a revolutionary masterpiece concerning Alexander Hamilton and the other founding fathers of the United States. Hamilton, an American musical, premiered off-Broadway at the Public Theater in New York City on January 20, 2015, and then officially opened on Broadway at the Richard Rogers Theaters on August 6, 2015. When Merrill and I first started talking about this fantastic music her Philadelphia uncle had seen at the Public Theater, I was not at all interested. A reboot of the 1969 Tony Award for the Best Musical, 1776? You've got to be kidding. School social studies was never a passion of mine, so no thank you. Merrill kind of felt the same way, yet her uncle kept raving about it until she listened to the soundtrack. The first song that caught her attention was Helpless. It was often played in the car so that I could hear it too. I was still cold on the idea of a musical about the creation of our country, but I listened to the song and her thoughts about it. About a month later, Merrill made a point of playing the particular song from the musical for me as she was helping me clean my place. While picking up the bathroom rugs, I listened to Jonathan Groff, who played the part of King George III, and the original Broadway cast sing You'll Be Back, that rancorous and hilarious love song with the line, "I will kill your friends and family to remind you of my love," won me over. I soon bought and memorized the entire soundtrack and watched pirated scenes from the show online. I happily became hooked on Hamilton. After 3 years of enjoying the musical soundtrack and bootleg videos, Merrill and I saw one of the touring company's performances of Hamilton at the Fabulous Fox in Atlanta on May 23, 2018. It was a great show and an item checked off my ever-expanding bucket list, LOL. I still enjoy singing some of the songs in my car and at a real-life and online karaoke spots. My favorite song to hear and sing is What Did I Miss? Thomas Jefferson's introduction and the opening song of the second act. Hamilton, an American musical, is a national treasure and, in my opinion, should be used to help teach kids American history. And that's all we have time for today. I hope you enjoyed the reading today and reminiscing from the last year of 2025. Happy New Year.